some of the childhood memories about your grandfather?
Well, I suppose first thing I'd have to say is a very formal kind of a man. And as a child, I knew him up until I was about 14 years old, before he died. And my first memories would be going to Sydney, to Manly, where he had retired, and with my parents. But at later stage, I was very fortunate because I spent all my school holidays at Manly with my grandparents. And it was a wonderful experience to have. He was a very formal person. To give an indication of this, and I guess it's going back into the older times also, he was known as Father. Now, my father called him Father. Everyone in the family called him Father. His wife called him Father. And in fact, as a young fellow, I don't think I heard many people ever call him anything else but Father. He was a bit intimidating, I suppose. My mother was always a little scared of him for some reason. In the sense, not physically or anything, but he was a dominant person, but not a dominating person. Kids loved him, and he loved kids. He was born to be a teacher, and a teacher he was for all his life. A couple of examples. The children round Manly, where he'd retired, would flock round the place. And he'd be sitting there, and I'd be amongst them, and he'd be telling us stories, and bush stories, and he was a naturalist. He loved the bush. He'd written many, many stories about bush creatures and the bush. But one example was that of him being a teacher was that when we'd sit at the meal table, there were a few rules that you had to abide by. If you wanted the butter, you'd have to spill butter. If you wanted the sugar, you'd have to spill sugar. It all went okay as long as you could spill, you got what you're after. But when it came to cheese, that was a different ball game altogether. Because if you couldn't spell Ben Gunn, you wouldn't get the cheese. And of course, Ben Gunn from Treasure Island, all Ben wanted was, give me cheese, a life for a cheese, or my treasure for a cheese. And so this is what he worked that way. And he did that with all the grandkids. So it was quite interesting to find that at a later stage. He was a lovely man. He really was. And I think he'd had a wonderful life, and he enjoyed it. As I say, being a teacher is one of I think he was born to be a teacher. I could go on with other stories.
Well, the next question was, do you know of any stories about your grandfather?
Well, I've just given
one. You're happy with that? Yep. Okay, yeah. Cool. That's all right.
There are other stories that come in later, I suppose.
Yeah, but that'll go into the second question of why you think he's significant.
Yeah.
So, John, why do you think your grandfather was a significant person in the community?
Well, he started life off... He came from a large family, a family of nine. They were a poor family. His father worked on the railway, and he would have gone to bush schools in the Goulburn district. I'm not quite sure what schools he attended there. We still haven't found that out. But obviously he was a bright student, and it appears that he became a student teacher. I think in those days the master of the school would often take someone under their wing, and they would do a form of apprenticeship. So at the age of 18, the New South Wales Education Department employed him as a teacher, and his first posting was to be sent from Goulburn up into the Tindabella Ranges into Nace. He was teaching at the part-time schools of Nace and Gibraltar Falls. These two schools were 16 miles apart, and of course he had to ride horse from one to the other, and he'd teach one a week at one and a week at the other. It must have been a very hard kind of life in those days, because he was the inaugural teacher at both those schools. He set them up in the bush. And I think he found that experience fairly hard, because after 2.5 years he sought to be transferred, or as they used to say in the education department, then removed from one posting to another. But during the time that he was at NACE, he became friendly with the Farrow family, and that's William Farrow of the wheat industry. I think from there he gained an interest into the farming environment, and that stayed with him all his life for when he moved on to later schools. He moved after 2.5 years from NACE Gibraltar, and he was given a full public school because they were part time ones, and that was at Claremont. Again, this was the first time the school had opened at Claremont, so he was the inaugural teacher at Claremont. Claremont, and he shifted on from there later, I think about a year and a half he was there, but it didn't last that long. And interestingly enough, I found just recently, they didn't know where this Claremont school was, and a farmer was digging his field up and found inkwells, and they researched back and found that's where Claremont School was. So now we know where it was. While he was there, he amongst the students he was teaching were the Weatherspoon family. Matilda Weatherspoon would have been about 14 at this time. He was later to marry her when she was 19. So obviously he met his wife while he was teaching there. His next posting was to a place, not a common name. If on your way to Goulburn, you'll often see a creek, Runno Waters Creek. Well, there was a school at Yarra, and it was called Runno Waters. That was the name of the area. And he taught at Runno Waters School, and that was during the period he married Matilda. He was there for a couple of years. He was then removed from there to Ginninderra, part-time schools of Ginninderra and Gungahlin. Not Gungahlin, Gungahlin is the proper pronunciation and spelling. And he took a great interest in the community. He was the inaugural secretary of the Ginninderra Farmers Union with Edward Crace, who the suburb in Canberra is named after, was the president. And they were the only president and secretary of that organisation before it was disbanded many years later. They did a wonderful job because evidently the district was the whole, and I include Hall and Ginninderra and the whole district that of here, that they were very astute people, and farming wise they were some of the leaders in the state, both with their methods and their innovations, and they did a great job. For instance, they raised money, built a school of arts in Ginninderra. That school, the hut for the school, when the federal government took over the area, was actually sold off. And I'm not quite sure where it ended up. I think that might have been the hut that was transferred to the hall at one stage. And there were other activities, the parents and citizens activities, there were the shows, the Canberra Show. The beginnings of that started with the Ginninderra Farmers Union, and they ran several, or quite a few, very successful district shows. And that, of course, grew, moved to Hall, moved from Hall, now it's the Royal Canberra Show. So that was the beginning of that. And he was highly involved in it. Then in 1911, he was asked to do a report, because what had happened at Ginninderra that was all private land owned by one landowner. And at the time, Crace was the main landowner. And a village had grown up there with its own blacksmith shop, that had its own police. There was even a contingent of the army there, Army Reserve. And it had churches, schools, but it was all on private land. So the government were asked to formalise the area. And what happened, my grandfather was asked to write a report, to formalise the area, and the government then surveyed the district and decided that Ginninderra was not suitable for a village. So looking further afield, they came to Hall. And so the formal village of Ginninderra was established at Hall. So we ended up with two Ginninderras. That didn't last for long. So one was renamed Hall. The children from the district all came to the Ginninderra school, and my grandfather was asked to do a survey to see if there should be a school built at Hall, because by this time more people had started to live at the Hall village. He actually was against it, because he was saying there was a very good school house and a school building at Ginninderra, and at the time he did his report, there'd be children having to walk either to Ginninderra or to Hall, so he could see no reason and didn't recommend it. Later on, as the population in the village of Hall grew, there was more agitation, and so in 1913... 1911, you'll have to adjust that. 1911, I think it was, the Hall School was formed, and he was appointed as, and Ginninderra closed, and he was appointed as the teacher here, and he continued teaching at Hall for many years after that. And there are many stories written about him as a teacher. I think he was rather a firm teacher. He wasn't backward in using the cane where it was necessary. But it was all recorded in the punishments book, as I understand. Might add to that a little bit too, because she taught as well.
Yeah,
typical definitely. Of a bush school teacher, wife.
She taught?
Yes, she taught at Runnawaters, she taught at Ginninderra, and she taught here.
But she started her teaching after they got married?
Yes.
Yeah,
but she wasn't a formal teacher. She only the wife of the teacher often taught sewing and all the to the girls at the. All right, and then it gets to the retirement. Mm. In the family history that I've written, I didn't know of his life at Hall, and other than what my father's told me, because I haven't mentioned he taught all his own children.
Mm.
We've done a bit of research on. Mm. But we know that, all those roles he took on, Ginninderra Farmers Union, the Advance Hall Agricultural Association, which took over the Hall Show, the secretary of that, secretary of the Hall Cricket Club, got involved to have the St Francis Catholic Church built at the top of the hill, organised when the troops came back from overseas, in the First World War, to have presentations and gatherings. So we've got a lot of that stuff. We've got from Trove, the National Library's online resources base, from newspaper articles. That's why he was so popular. I mean, they used to have meetings in the old Cricketers Arms Hotel, so he got to know the locals pretty well, as well as having functions at the
hall. I hope we can hear this.
So he was quite a prominent character. Yeah. Plus, a lot of the people here couldn't write.
Yeah, he was virtually the scribe of the district.
Yeah.
He taught extra classes for adult classes overnight time, because, as Phil said, quite a few of the people couldn't write in those days.
Mm.
And he'd also, I can remember Father saying to him, telling me that helped a lot, did business papers for a lot of them. Like if someone wanted a letter written for something or some of their business dealings or whatever, he'd assist with that.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
He wrote articles for the Queanbeyan Age?
Yeah.
I saw the poetry side of it coming in and coming out.
He wrote a number of obituaries for locals, the local identities who died.
Yeah.
He would write the obituary to go into the newspaper.
Yeah.
Things like that. He's a good naturalist as well.
Yeah.
He wrote lots and lots of work about birds and fauna around the area.
So, John, what is one thing you most want people to remember about your grandfather?
I don't think I can answer your question because there's more than one thing. There are many things. But I guess looking back on his life, I think would be to say that he was a teacher. He was a born teacher. I think that's the main theme that I would press. But he also liked to be involved with people and help people, and I think that would have been his main part. That how, particularly when you consider some of the attributes after his death that people made, that they all expressed gratitude for him having met him within their life and for what he had done. And I think that was very significant. The other significant thing that sticks in my mind is that how much he saw. He became, and I haven't mentioned this before, the first Commonwealth school teacher, because the schools in the ACT were run by New South Wales. The Commonwealth paid the money to run them, but the teachers were actually Commonwealth teachers but supported by New South Wales, and he was the first of the Commonwealth teachers. So that's another significant thing, and I think that's rather important. And I just like to think the memory of him that I have is such a nice man.
What did your father remember of him?
Dad used to talk a lot. More about Hall, I guess.
Because he taught your father.
He taught
so
me.
He would have seen him not just as a father but also as a teacher.
Oh, yes, yeah, sure. No, he had great respect for him.
Mm.
And he often used to tell the stories about Hall and living here and school and the rest.
Mm.
But no, there was nothing really significant. I think, I might be wrong, Phil, but I think kids tend to remember their grandparents in many ways more than they do their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This might sound crazy, but you know, quite often the parent is taken for granted.
Mm.
And then the grandparents, of course, usually by the time they become grandparents, they can support the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they get the credit for it.
Yeah. You tell the story about when you sat at the dining table, how everything was quite formal.
Oh, yes.
And that you
formal.
Had to pass certain tests.
Yes, yes. That's true.
Spelling tests. Mental arithmetic.
Yes, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
He used to have his study, or I suppose you'd call it a study. He called the dugout at Manly.
Mm.
And it was during the war years,
no,
so that's probably why he called it the dugout.
All right.
And he'd have maps all over. The whole room was covered in maps.
Mm-hmm.
He'd follow what happened in different theatres of the war.
Yeah.
And, the other thing is cricket.
Yeah.
He was mad keen on cricket. And in those little books, it's got the scores of the cricket. And he's got the family. Mother, which was a grandmother.
Yeah.
Kevin, Doris, Bertha and all the rest of them, they'd all have to give what they reckon the score would be at the end of the test. And he's written about the book.
I guess the one at the end got us a prize or something.
I love that. I've got a grandfather like that.
But my mother was always a bit scared of him. Don't ask me why.
She called him father as well?
Oh, yeah, everyone called him father.
Wow.
Yeah, he was addressed as father.